Thanks for listening to Access U-Time. Tom Williams. My guest is Mary Roach, author previously of bestsellers Gulp and Stiff and Packing for Mars. Her latest book is Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. You're welcome to join the conversation if you would like. 800-826-1495 is the toll-free number, 800-826-1495. Or you can join us by email to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Mary Roach, I'd like to tackle some of these fascinating questions, beginning with you have a whole chapter on clothing and gear. This fascinating question, how is a wedding gown like a bomb suit?
A wedding gown, first I should say as background that one of the fashion designers at Natick Labs, she came from Priscilla of Boston, which is a purveyor of high-end wedding gowns, and I said to her, that seems like a very unusual career path from wedding gowns to, say, a bomb suit. And she said, well, not really when you think about it. A wedding gown, both a wedding gown and a bomb suit, involve a lot of layering of specialty fabrics, a lot of unusual fabrics that are not necessarily used in day-to-day wear, and they're intricately layered. And, of course, also, I suppose, the cost could be quite expensive. But I thought that was fascinating. Someone else in the lab there at Natick had come from a background of designing women's swimwear. And, again, it didn't seem to me to be a logical career move. And she said, no, on the contrary, if you think about a bathing suit, it's something that's designed for a very specific athletic activity, and it's the fabric has to accommodate the activity. In other words, it has to deal with water well. It's got to stretch. It's got to be particularly durable. It's similar to outfits or textiles that will be used on a soldier. You know, depending on what that soldier is doing and how hot or cold it is, it's the same type of considerations.
What did she say about? I can imagine satisfaction. There'd be maybe increased satisfaction outfitting soldiers to, high end fashion, or what was the? Did she compare and contrast the feeling?
I think certainly more of a sense of purpose and satisfaction that this is something that's making a really difficult job a little easier, more convenient, or more comfortable, or possibly all of those. So, yeah, for sure. Both of the people that I talked to really enjoyed their work there.
Does the military go recruiting? How do you find, how does someone like her find out about this?
I'm not sure how, they don't. She said that the jobs required a degree in fashion design. So I think that probably that they had posted it wherever one posts openings for fashion designers with pedigrees, and Priscilla of Boston, and Natick is outside Boston, so probably just local, either word of mouth or some local listings. I'm not quite sure.
You looked into food. I was fascinated to learn the Army's developed a sandwich that can last 2 to 3 years, meat that can last 6 months.
Yes, the long shelf life is very important with the military. That's something that could be, you could send it out, ship it out to a unit that's going to be, traveling away from refrigeration and away from kitchens, and it could last however long that whole supply line process takes. The way that it's done is that they tend to be completely devoid of any kind of bacterial or microbes, so that they don't rot. But that there's been a concern. About a year ago, I spoke to one of my contact there at Natick, and he said that they were doing a study that was looking at whether this extremely low bacteria count food was essentially messing with the microflora, the microbiome in the gut of soldiers. I mean, there's so much talk now about the healthy microbiome and people taking probiotics, essentially taking into their bodies these helpful bacteria. And so there was a concern: are we causing harm to soldiers by giving them these bacteria-free foods? And so there was a study going on. They were recruiting people at the time for you would spend, I forget how many weeks or something, like 6 weeks, eating only MREs, which stands for meals ready to eat. So you would have them three times a day, and then they were going to take stool samples along the way and see what was happening with the bacteria in your gut, and was it changing significantly, and was this a dangerous thing? And I don't know what the outcome of that study was, but I imagine it might have been a little hard to recruit. Having tasted MREs, might have been a little tough to recruit the subjects for that, but he claimed not. He said that they were getting people signing up.
I was just going to ask you, so you have tasted MREs. What's the verdict?
Oh, I've tasted one, just what they happen to have on hand. I had a caffeinated meat stick, which tastes about like what you would imagine caffeinated meat to taste like. I mean, if there are people who love them, the caffeinated meat stick, I would rather get my caffeine in a cup of coffee or a piece of chewing gum, which they've also come up with. They're highly processed. They're quite good for what they are. I mean, they're better that than some of the earlier, the heavily salted meat products and spam type things. I mean, I think they've, like space food, it's come a long way, but it's not mom's cooking,
So somewhat related topic, one of these fascinating questions. You went to Djibouti, discovered that diarrhea can be a threat to national security?
Yes, I went to Djibouti with Captain Mark Riddle of the Navy, who has studied essentially diarrhea in all its forms, from minor inconvenience to life-threatening. And he was testing a better, quicker treatment for diarrhea, pill that is, antibiotic type thing. And he was so he was traveling there, and I had a conversation with him about why are you going there? And the answer is that there, Camp Lemonnier in Djibouti, a lot of the counterinsurgency units, which are often Navy SEALs and other special operations units, they go out of that base, and they tend to be spending time in small villages in Somalia or Yemen or elsewhere in North Africa, and they're eating on the economy, is the way they phrase it in the military. They're not eating the very safe, hygienic food that's served on the base. They're out in a small village eating, say, goat that might not have been refrigerated or water that might not have been filtered, and they get diarrhea at a rate twice as high as other troops. And it's, in their case, given that, the nature of a Navy SEAL mission is quite critical, and they're small units. There's sometimes two or three men, and they are you can't really just say, okay, you go on without me. You got to keep going. And you can imagine, if you've got the worst case of diarrhea you've ever had, how that plays out. So it is, in that sense, kind of a matter of national security.
So being studied, I guess, any potential solutions?
There's a drug, rifaximin, I think it was, that is a very quick and is something that you could take just once, and rather than over the course of 3 days, which also the shorter the time that you're on it, the less likely there's going to be resistant strains developing, hopefully. So that was a positive element of it. But it's very expensive, and it's not something I would imagine is going to quickly replace some of the cheaper options. But, as with most of these things, eventually there'll be a generic or there'll be a cheaper version. So, yeah, there are some hopeful, helpful developments.
Steve has emailed us, and he has made reference to one of those fascinating questions that I put out there. He wants to make sure we get this. He says, why are shrimp more dangerous to sharks than sailors?
I'm glad he wrote in. Specifically for submariners. That on a submarine where you live by sound. You know, you're blind. You can't. There are no windows. You're only able to sense what's around you by sonar, and that includes knowing if there's a ship overhead while you're surfacing. You know, what exactly is going on around you. You need to be able to listen very carefully, and you've got teams of sonar men on duty 24 hours a day. And there's something called snapping shrimp, and they're huge. Huge schools of them would rush over when the submarine discharges its the slop from dinner, the stuff that we would put into the compost bin. When that gets sent out, the shrimp, these schools of shrimp rush over, and they may just be around anyway, not necessarily just when that happens, but they make this loud snapping sound there. I think they're forcing air out of some part of their body. But anyway, they make such a racket that it masks the sound of, say, a propeller of another ship. It's very hard to know what's going on around you when you have the cacophony of these snapping shrimp. So in that sense, they are more dangerous than sharks. Sharks, the incidence of shark attack in the armed forces keeps track of these things, and especially in World War II, when there was a lot of hysteria about shark attacks because there were battles going on over and in warmer waters, that just almost zero. There are just very, very few shark attacks. Lots of sharks around, but not attacking anyone. They would more often be going after the fish that would gather under a life raft, because there'd be little fish that would gather, I guess, for the shade, or maybe just who knows why, but they would hang out underneath, and the sharks would come over and take the fish. They were underneath the life rafts, and the men would quickly figure out that it wasn't them that the sharks were interested in, and they would relax and not be so concerned. But anyway, the answer is twofold. One is the snapping shrimp, and also the fact that sharks are not particularly dangerous.
Mm. Let's take another break. When we come back, I want to you have a couple of chapters on submarines. I think this captured my imagination vividly, I think probably because of fears. I just would not want to be in the cramped confines of a submarine. And then this, that you write, at a depth of 1,000 feet, an 8-inch hole in the side of a submarine would let an Olympic-sized swimming pool's worth of water on board every 3 minutes. So there's that. And there's some science behind this, trying to keep submariners safe. We'll talk about that and more following this break.